The Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
Hi, this is Mike Newell from Mouse World Radio and WDW Today, and you're listening to the Mickey Miles Podcast. And Mike Scopa swears he's going to get me either to run or be on the show at some point.
This is the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 485 of the Mickey Miles and More Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa, and with me on the show today is Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and our special guest, Len Testa. We've been talking with Len about Pandora, the World of Avatar, and we've been talking about the Navi River Journey, and now we're about to transition to the other major attraction in Pandora, and that is the Flight of Passage. So let's join in as we're just about to transition from one to the other.
So let's talk about Flight of Passage. It's in the center of the land. It shares a ride building with the Navi River Journey. The Flight of Passage stuff is built, some of it is built on top of the Navi River Journey. But you walk up a winding hill and you enter the caves of Pandora. And when I say this is one of the longest queues, one of the longest lines you will ever walk through. Do you guys remember Dueling Dragons or Dragon Challenge at Universal? Do you know how long that queue is?
Right. Well, compare it to Indiana Jones and Disneyland.
Yeah.
Oh, this is longer than that. Oh,
no. Really? Wow.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Pack a lunch.
Drop some breadcrumbs, yeah.
You go through, like, every geographic feature of Pandora. I think you start off in the caves and you see this wonderful cave art that I'm sure tells the history of the Navi people. You go outside into the jungle at night. You go back in through more rock work. You go back out into the outside of the human labs that they've established. Then you finally go back into the labs and you see some really interesting experiments. But the line is just incredibly long. The most interesting thing about it, though, is how detailed it is. Every little room that you're in has an additional detail in it. There is absolutely no problem at all with the theming on anything in Pandora. It is top notch, first rate, the best Disney's ever done. You get to a lab scene where you guys have seen the picture of the floating Navi in the tube.
Yeah.
It's either interesting or vaguely unsettling, depending on your particular point of view. But it's But the lab itself is actually pretty interesting. A lot of it is computer screen based, so you see different experiments running and they change. They do this. Do you guys know what ferrous liquids are?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. So they do some really interesting experiments or some really interesting things where they get magnets to move around this ferrous metal suspended in an oil to make it look like things that are actually alive in the experiments.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. If you know how it works, it's a great effect. They really, really did that well. So you're finally led through. Then you go through you get broken up into groups of 16. You enter the pre-show area where they show you a film explaining why you want to ride a banshee and, you know, how it is literally the rite of passage for the Navi people and how you're going to be in an avatar and so on and so on. The interesting thing about the pre-show is there are multiple different pre-shows. So the way it works is the first half is essentially your safety briefing or your introduction to it. Then the second half, I think, varies depending on the room you're in. So just like Mission Space, there are different rooms that you stand in. But our ride broke down in the middle of the briefing, in the middle of the second half of the briefing. They took us out and brought us into another room, and the second half of the briefing was completely different. So that'll enhance the rewritability a little bit, the fact that there's a different briefing. You go out of that, you enter this sort of long corridor, and you're presented with these things that look like bicycles. And you have to, like, throw a leg over them, and they ask you to scooch up as close to it as you can. And you get some 3D goggles, by the way, which you're supposed to put on. You sit down, They go through a whole safety check thing. And then these padded restraints come up, and this is the interesting part. A padded restraint comes up sort of to your lower back and comes up around your calves. Hmm. And depending on your body shape, you can be not at all overweight, but depending on how your legs are shaped, the restraints won't click shut. And when they don't, and the cast members will have to come around and either try and make it click or ask you to not to ride. There are 64 people, 48 people at a time seeing this. So I think it's three different levels, like Soren, 16 people per level. The interesting thing that we saw was once you're harnessed into this thing, once the back restraints are in and your leg restraints are in, you basically wait there until the cast members figure out how to get resolved any problems with people whose restraints aren't in place. And for us, that was a good 2 or 3 minutes. If you're claustrophobic, this is going to drive you crazy.
There goes Mike. He's not going to be riding this.
Yeah, because you're basically immobile. You're held, you know. I mean, you could get up and leave if you wanted to. But there's that feeling that it's almost like you're enveloped in a blanket from the hips down. That's sort of how it felt to me. Wow. And yeah, so.
What about children? How tall do you have to be?
44, I think.
Yeah, 45. I don't recall the height requirement. But the interesting thing about kids is there is only one size of 3D goggle right now. And what the cast members tell kids is you don't have to hold on to the handlebars of the bike. Just hold on to the glasses to keep them in place.
Wow.
And this is the thing that drives me crazy. Like, I get I could see my way past the wheelchair thing, right? I mean, there could be a technical explanation for it. But you can't tell me, after 5 years and $500 million of development, Disney doesn't know how to measure the size of a kid's head. I mean, come on.
It's just ridiculous.
It's sloppy, right? That's just not – there's no excuse for that. And so, we've checked, and Disney's supposed to be working on that particular thing. But, yeah, come on. There's no – what I've heard –
if AMC can manage to do it, why can't Disney do it?
Well, what I've heard from people is this, and so this is sort of the generic catch-all excuse, but there are times when you open the ride when you're ready, and there are times when you open the ride when you're told. Mm-hmm. And it may be one of those things. So they're definitely learning as they go along. But the ride itself is imagine you're on a bicycle and you're looking at Soarin' with 3D goggles. It's like that. You can turn your head pretty far to the left and right and up and down, and the visuals still stay with you. I will say that the closer you are to the middle of the room, the better the visuals are. Laurel was on the very far end of the right and said she could look up and down and see like all three different levels of riders and see everything along it. So that's if you have the choice to sit in the middle.
So you actually go up in the air?
No. You don't go up in the air. You're stable, but you can look down and see down, and you can look up and see up.
Got it. Okay.
So imagine the platforms for Soarin', were just fixed in space, and you like went upstairs or downstairs to get to the right levels, and then sort of the floor, you leaned out instead of got lifted up. It's like that.
So Len, why the restraints?
I think they're concerned about the virtual reality. You would just fall over.
Oh,
and
wow.
and I get that. There are times when you I don't know if the ride vehicle tilts or not, but there are times when you feel like you're tilting. Also, the way the ride vehicle is shaped is it's got like air bladders down by your legs, and so the idea is that you're riding the Banshee, you're astride it like a horse, and there are air bladders that inflate and deflate to make it feel like the Banshee is breathing.
Okay,
which is pretty good. The one criticism I heard about this, and I think it's true, is no matter how fast or slow the Banshee is breathing, or sorry, is flying, the breathing doesn't change pace. So you would expect that, like during the most strenuous parts of the experience, the Banshee's breath would be faster, and it's not.
But I can accept that faster than I can the 3D glasses for kids.
Yeah. that's fine. Yeah, I get that. The thing itself is. It's very interesting. It's got the same pace as Soarin', so the new version of Soarin', where you go like you're basically 30 or 45 seconds per scene, and the scene shifts and you're somewhere else. It's basically like that. So you go through the mountains and the plains and the oceans of Pandora. In fact, I haven't done a side-by-side comparison of the scenes. I would be moderately surprised if there wasn't a one-to-one correspondence between them. There's a mildly dramatic moment. I won't give it away in the Flight of Passage, but it's all resolved with a beautiful sunset over the beach. But again, the visually, very, very good. The things that I've heard about it are this: the whole ride contraption thing is over-engineered. The bikes with the restraints and the glasses and the fitting and then the having to push people in and whatnot, it's all just too much for what the ride is.
Plus, it's got to take time, so it's going to slow down the ride queue like crazy.
Yeah. So the thing that I've heard is that they're trying for an 8-minute cycle time, which is about 1,400 people an hour. There is no way they're hitting 10 minutes right now, which would put it down to like 1,000 people an hour or below what Toy Story Mania was with just two tracks.
You know, Len, when you were talking about the queue, Michelle and I were looking at each other because we did see a video of the queue, and that's one of the comments that we made. And we made it over and over again. It's like, wait a minute. They went from one queue to, like, it seemed like the queue went through different phases or different modes or different different areas. And it's like, holy cow, how long does this take? And then the first thing I thought of is, what about kids with weak bladders?
You definitely want to hit the restrooms before you go in there. they say that if when the entire queue is full, the line is 5 or 6 hours.
Oof.
And you would not wait in line for that.
Inside or outside the queue?
It's entirely inside. And the interesting thing about Navi River Journey is the vast majority of it is outside. It's not air conditioned. It's sort of an open air. You're in a dome, like a hut for some of it. But literally, as soon as you get to the show building, you're on the ride. I mean, it's not, I think it's maybe 10 yards indoors. Whereas Flight of Passage, virtually all of it is the queue is inside.
So there's no worries about heat stroke or...
No. The other thing that they did really well is even on Navi River Journey, where it's outdoors, there are fans everywhere in the line. They did a great job thinking about the cooling on that. They did a really good job there. And then inside Flight of Passage, it's all air conditioned, obviously. I think Flight of Passage was good for what it was. My big comments on it were, again, I don't really care about this Banshee. I don't really care about other than the experience of riding the Banshee. I've got no emotional connection to anything that I'm seeing. I don't really care about Pandora. These scenes are all generic to me. Imagine flying by any given alien landscape, right? Plains, rivers, oceans, forests, mountains. I mean, that's what it is.
Don't want to go.
You should go to see it. But again,
that's what I'm saying. Like the curiosity, I want to go see it, but it's like there's nothing there. Like you go to
a
Star Wars
land. Did you see
the movie,
Chris? Did you see it?
I saw it years ago. The only thing that made it sell so much was because it was the first really true 3D movie, and everybody went to go see it because it was like the first time that it actually worked well.
Yeah, and there were some good visuals. The thing I think would have helped this was to tie what we were seeing into some aspect of the story. Give me a tidbit. Give me something in this ride that would have connected me to the movie a little bit more, right? Like, there's some rides like Star Tours where simply going through the scenes that you are familiar with are interesting, right? But when you're going through Star Tours and you're going through the battle sequence or the canyon run or whatever, or through the asteroid fields or whatnot, you kind of already know the characters, you like the characters, you like the story, you know the locations, and you're happy to be a part of it. Here, they still haven't got you to that point. So this literally could have been any planet that we were on, and it could have been any animal that we were riding, and we would have all been fine. If this was How to Tame Your Dragon, right, to bring up another flying dragon thing, same ride, right? It wouldn't have changed. Yeah.
So I got to ask about this ankle thing again. I'm really curious about this. So are you politely saying that people with chubby ankles can't go on? Or is it short ankle? I don't understand.
So the restraints come up around your calves. And okay. So I think it's really sort of like the shape of your calves. If the distance between your hip and your knee is relatively short compared to the length between to the size of your calves, it won't click.
Wow.
So there were a couple of people who were my height who had thicker calves, right? Definitely not huge. I mean, these aren't things that are, you know, they're not like bodybuilder calves or anything like that. And you would look at that and say, yeah, that should be fine. And it wasn't for some reason.
Wow.
And just if you looked at the average, you know, 60 average people in line, there's no way you could pick out the people that were going to have problems with their restraints. So I'm not even sure what's going on there. The other thing, too, was there were a number of technical issues as we were going through the AP preview. And we heard it was the ride, the bikes themselves were breaking down, or the video screens were overheating. So they were closing off both individual bikes and then entire rooms during the AP preview. So some of the stuff that I saw could have just been related to the bikes, right? Some of the stuff that we can't explain could be something else.
So Len, do you think the obvious question is, with this case of the ride vehicle, Disney did not have the idea of putting a ride vehicle way at the beginning of the queue to have guests?
They're
going to
do
out?
It. Oh, okay. Yeah, there's going to be one out soon. So so I think that'll definitely help.
Like, isn't the Harry Potter ride have something like that?
Yeah. A lot of the the Universal rides have them. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, like the Hulk.
They should.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
Interesting.
Well, moving on, have you tried the Satui? Is it the Satui Canteen?
Satui Canteen. Yeah, I did. So in true Unofficial Guide fashion, I ordered one of everything.
We'd be disappointed if you didn't.
Oh my gosh! At least I wasn't there.
I think some of it is very good. The desserts I think are very good. I like there's like a blueberry cheesecake that's fantastic. But the basic premise of it is for lunch and dinner, it's almost like Pandora Chipotle. You have a base, which is I think there's one like a kale salad. One is a quinoa base. Another is a potato and sweet potato hash. And I think the fourth is rice. Then you pick a protein, which is tofu, vegetables, fish, chicken, or beef. And then you pick a sauce, which is a black bean-based sauce, a herby, a creamy herb, and then a chimichurri sort of green onion. And you combine all three of those things. So it's sort of like, you know, pick something from column A, something from column B, something from column C, and put it all together in a bowl. I thought it was fine. From my perspective, the prices that they were charging, which were like $11.50 or $13 for the bowls, was a good value. I expect Disney to raise those prices soon.
I just like the idea that there are so many choices for different diets. I like
that. 48 different 48 different combinations of bowl. Yeah, the surprising thing to me was the thing that I liked best was the tofu bowl with kale. I'm not a vegan or vegetarian, but that was by far the best with sort of the creamy herb dressing. The tofu cubes were the size of decent sized croutons, and that's what to me what they functioned as, a crouton. And I thought it was very good. I thought the chicken was the next best, then the beef. I thought the fish was a little dry. In terms of the dressings, I think the creamy herb was the best. I think the chimichurri was second, and I did not get anything at all out of the black bean curry or whatever it was. Also, they do a sort of like a cheeseburger in a steamed bun, which looks strange but tastes great. I really liked it. I think kids will like it too.
Less filling.
Yeah, no.
A steamed bun.
Yeah, so like, you know, like normally you go to a Chinese place and you get pork in steamed buns, like minced spicy pork in steamed buns. Imagine that, but with ground beef and cheese.
Wow.
Absolutely fine. Nothing wrong with it.
Can you describe to me what a boba ball is?
Yeah, so it's like, have you ever had a tapioca ball or like a bubble tea?
But Bubble tea. Those little bubbles.
It's that.
Oh,
it's that.
Oh, okay.
So you get a thicker straw, something that you would use for like a milkshake. And yeah, it was fine. Laurel had one of the alcoholic drinks. It was fine for what it was. I didn't think it was great. I didn't think it was terrible. The prices seemed fine. They have a green beer as well that looked fine. I didn't try because I was driving. Yeah, I mean the drinks were okay. The Pungu place is really just two windows in the middle of the – or sort of on one end of the land next to the Flight of Passage entrance, sort of between Flight of Passage and the merchandise shop. It's not a sit-down. It's a window like a Aloha aisle or something like that.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much for that.
Still not going.
Yeah, I'm not.
You should go and see it. The thing
I will go and see it, but it seems like most of like Animal Kingdom. It's like you walk through and you get to see sights, and you know, most my kids would get bored by it in a heartbeat. It sounds like
it's very pretty. The rides aren't.
That's gonna sell.
She's got
the
a great personality.
Yeah. So Tom is a box of rocks, but man, a knockout. I may be underselling it. I would go back and walk through it. I would love to see it at night. What I've heard is that the nighttime effects will try to make them run for the first time ever on May 27th, opening day, or like the media preview.
That's always a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, sometimes you open a ride when it's ready. Sometimes you open a ride when you're told.
Tell you is they're going to have to put ankle bracelets on you when you have to stay there at night. So,
yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. It is really good.
We have one more episode left with Len Tesser of TouringPlans.com, the Lines app, and the Unofficial Guide series. So for Len Tesser, for Chris Aliopoulos, for Michelle Scrivener-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we hope that you'll join us, and we'll see you on the road and in the parks.
The Mickey Miles podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. Like to support the podcast, please go to mickeymiles.podbean.com and click the green Become a Patron button in the upper right-hand corner of the menu bar. We thank you for your support. Don't forget, our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/mickeymilespodcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/mickeymilespod. Last of all, don't forget, if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@mickeymilespodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening, for all your support, and until next time, we'll see you on the road.